Always good when you're getting ready to come back into a segment and the TVs in the studio just shut off all of a sudden.
Are the mics working?
Are we on the air?
You guys hear me?
What's going on?
Chris, you good? We clean?
Chris doesn't care.
We're good. Okay. Got a thumbs up. Word.
He's watching something else in there.
Yeah.
Probably some European soccer or something going on, some BPL or whatever's happening. I wish there was BPL during the week, but this is the lowdown.
You and me both, bro.
Chuck is a soccer
guy. You and me
guy.
Both, bro.
Soccer or WWE, Chuck? What's taking up more of your time?
Oh, my God. I mean, both.
All day?
Yeah. I mean, I'm a multitasker, so, you know.
Two screens, one soccer, one WWE. Mm-hmm.
Got to get my BPL in.
Attaboy.
What's that stand for?
Barclays Premier League.
Okay.
European Premier League.
It's not Barclays anymore.
Oh, it's not? There you go. EPL, then, or English Premier League, whatever the hell it is.
Yep.
See? Look at me, stupid American.
Ugh.
Typical.
The worst.
So it's not Barclays anymore, and I just sound like a fool trying to act like I knew what I was talking about with soccer. I enjoy soccer, but I can't talk it. Anyway, we can talk plenty of football, which we have been. We're also going to talk some Sacramento Kings basketball here. This is the lowdown, by the way. Matt George, Charles T. Hamilton filling in for Damian Barling and Jason Ross. Don't you worry. They will be back, and everything will be right as rain as normal tomorrow. We're just doing some holiday shakeups for you to make sure you're on your toes and changing things. Changing things, because everybody likes change. I have a newfound respect, Chuck.
Yeah.
Because on Saturday night, my fiance and I sat down for about 3 hours and did nothing but wrap gifts for this year. We just decided to do a stockpile of all the gifts and then wrap them all at once. I have a newfound respect for anybody who can wrap presents, because I have more paper cuts and a lower self-esteem than I ever have had in my
life. That's hilarious, dude, because we didn't even talk about this. I went and I've been ordering stuff, the gifts to give out this year, and I went and picked up some wrapping paper. Normally, I'll just get a friggin' newspaper and do that. I'm like, you know what? I'm a grown-up.
Stuff it in a bag.
Yeah, I'm going to get some real wrapping paper. I'm terrible. It doesn't make any sense to me. I'm a moron. Nothing makes you feel dumber than trying to wrap a gift.
Like, and my fiance can do it really, really well.
Yeah.
And like you would think it's super easy because you just put a box in there and put it's taking care of the sides, which is folding up. And there's somebody like listening to this right now that understands my pain. And there's another person that thinks we're the biggest idiots on the planet.
Oh, a lot
that
of
stuff is
that.
Origami to me.
Oh, no question.
So at first it started in me trying to help her actually wrap the presents, and it ended in my job was just put tape here and put your finger here for the ribbon. Other than that, that was all I did.
Chris, you remember in The Office when Roy's asking Pam about wrapping gifts? He's like, can I just use the comics from the paper? And she's like, no. And it only takes 3 pieces of tape to wrap a gift. That's when I knew Pam's the worst. I'm like, you don't even get it. You don't even understand. Pam and Jim are the worst. I mean, don't at me about it. They were the villains of The Office, honestly.
I'm Team Karen.
Yeah. Oh, Team Karen all day. Karen of Filippelli.
You guys go down these roads and these tangents, and I want to go with you, but...
Team Karen and then Michael Scott and Holly. That's the real love story of The Office. You're not an Office guy?
Oh,
you're missing out, Matt. You should check it out. You should check it out. I'm just saying. But Team Karen all day. Pam and Jim, whatever. Like, oh, you look at the camera when awkward stuff happens, Jim. That's hilarious.
You ever watch How You Met Your Mother or How I Met Your Mother?
No, I've heard I should check it out, though. I'd like it, yeah.
That's my show.
That's it?
I like that show.
Right on.
You like that show, Chris? He's laughing.
I've never watched it ever.
It's good.
I've heard.
Sure.
I've heard good things. I have.
God, I'm like the loser kid at lunch trying to talk to the cool kids.
Never.
And it just never works out.
You nod, smile, and nod. Office.
I do have a Sacramento Kings family, I hope,
okay.
But we all bicker and fight amongst one another because Jakar Sampson deserves more minutes or whatever the hell they want to argue about right now. But hey, the Sacramento Kings, they played yesterday morning or early afternoon. It was one of those matinee games against the Toronto Raptors. And hey, guess what? The Kings got off to another dreadful start. They were outscored 13-0 in the first few minutes by the Toronto Raptors. And tell me if you heard this before. It was the second unit, the bench, that got them back into the game. The Kings starters were De'Aaron Fox, Bogdan Bogdanovic, Garrett Temple. Scal is back from the G League and, of course, immediately into the starting lineup because that makes sense.
Yep.
And then Zach Randolph. Randolph and Bogdanovic were the only Kings starters to finish in double digits in scoring. George Hill was out for personal reasons. Jakar Sampson had another good game, 11 points, 4 rebounds, a steal, and 3 blocks in only 19 minutes. And the Kings tomorrow host the Phoenix Suns, and then they're back on the road for 4 straight games. Chuck, I've looked at the starts so many times, and I've tried to – I like to compliment myself in that I have a decent basketball IQ. But I'm sure the coaching staff feels the same way. No matter what they plug and try, the starting unit struggles for the Kings have me just completely bewildered.
It's no matter who they put in the starting lineup, it just doesn't work for whatever reason. And I don't get it. But that's just what it is. I mean, there's really no explanation. But they get off to these terrible starts. What was it, 13-0 last night? I think 17-2 at one point. And it's tough to win games like that. And I mentioned the other night to you, are you encouraged or discouraged? Because, yes, it's discouraging that for whatever reason the starting lineup just can't get anything going. The encouraging part, though, is when you start out 17-2, you would expect them to – I mean, you would expect more Atlanta-type games when they lost by 46 when you start out that way. But they've been able to bounce back every single game. And last night, the final score isn't indicative of how the rest of the game was played. Toronto was able to pile up a couple, you know, some points at the end. But it was closer throughout the game, 8-5 points throughout the rest of the game. So are you encouraged by how they play, how they bounce back, or just discouraged by the fact that they can't figure out a starting lineup that works?
I think I'm definitely encouraged, and I think most Kings fans should be based off of how they've been playing recently. Now, had the struggles of earlier continued with like the Atlanta Hawks blow on the road and then the Washington Wizards blowout at home, then I'd be singing a different tune. But I have been very encouraged recently by the play of the Kings, especially on the road. They've been a lot more competitive, hanging in games. The win in Golden State against the Warriors is a nice check mark on the resume of progress. And yes, you can add the asterisks of no Kevin Durant, no Steph Curry.
No asterisk needed. Whatever
it is, whether it's – and then they lost against the Cleveland Cavaliers because LeBron James went LeBron James. But the fact that you were in that game on the road, competitive – and then the second unit to me has been extremely encouraging because these guys have come out, been ready to play. My favorite player by far right now is Frank Mason. Frank Mason has done, how he stepped up, he's proven to me he is beyond NBA ready. And quite frankly, now, this is maybe a controversial thing to say here in Sacramento. Right now, Frank Mason is better than De'Aaron Fox.
Yeah.
And I think for a good period of time, he's going to be better than De'Aaron Fox. That's not to say that De'Aaron Fox isn't still the future and the number one guy here in Sacramento that they can build around, because he still definitely can develop into that. But Frank Mason right now, and it's clear, and it's so clear on the floor, he is more NBA ready. He's always ready to take control of the team. His basketball IQ is significantly higher. And you can see how much he allows the game to come to him, and he takes advantage of what comes to him versus De'Aaron Fox trying to use his quickness and his ability to get to the basket to create too much, and then it results in him becoming out of control.
Yeah, Frank Mason has a higher floor. De'Aaron Fox has a higher ceiling.
Yeah.
And Frank Mason also, he spent 4 years, right, at Kansas, right, wherever it was. That's part of it, too.
Yep.
He's had three more years of basketball experience than De'Aaron Fox has. And, yeah, at this moment, he is more NBA ready. But like I said, it's a higher floor for Frank Mason, a much higher ceiling for De'Aaron Fox. And it's good to see him, at least recently, he's been in the rotation.
Yep.
He's getting minutes. And that's a good thing to see. Because, you know, sometimes, and I think we're kind of seeing some of this with Jaeger in the front office, is certain draft picks being pushed to play over players who are producing with Jakarr Sampson, and, you know, who knows who the other options are,
yeah.
You know, Scal, whatever. Not that Scal doesn't deserve minutes, but it's good to see Frank Mason just getting the minutes that he deserves, because he does deserve to be out there.
And Chuck, let's do what we can to try and make Kings fans feel better, in the sense that one of the things I wanted to do here today, and we're going to do it here in a little bit, is list out — everybody wants the long-term goal and is focused on the long-term goal of, we want the Kings to get back to the playoffs and eventually be able to compete for a championship. That is the ultimate goal of every team,
yeah,
especially the Kings right now. They just get us back to the playoffs. Screw championship. Just get us back to the playoffs. That is the long-term goal for the Kings right now. And when you look at everything through that lens and through that scale, you are often disappointed, especially with how the team is right now and where they're at. So let's try and adjust that long-term goal and break it into some short-term goals that we want to see for the Kings by the end of this season or over the next couple of months of this season. So Kings fans may have tangible things to look for and to want to see the Kings do, and then you can see that progress happen. To me, when you see progress taking place in a developing team, that is almost as rewarding as eventually getting to the playoffs will be. And sometimes fans just need to be able to see that.
Well, it's kind of similar to the Niners and Raiders. It's about expectations. And Kings fans should have proper expectations.
Right.
Yes, you want to be back in the playoffs. That's not going to happen this year. It might not happen next year. I mean, look at teams that where we think it has worked out. Look at Philly.
Yeah.
We think it's worked out well for them. This is 3 or 4 years worth of work.
And they're still not there yet.
Exactly. And we still don't know if they are there or if they're going to make it, whatever. Minnesota, same thing.
Yeah.
3 or 4 years of work and getting Jimmy Butler.
Yep.
So it's about setting expectations. But one of the main things I want to see is just progression of rookies and youngsters.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of tough because they have so many of them. And that's part of the G League conversation we had. Like, assign people to the G League and leave them there.
Yeah.
Let them get their minutes, get some run, because it's similar to De'Aaron Fox. Not that he should be in the G League, but it's similar to De'Aaron Fox in that Frank Mason has 3 more years of basketball experience. These guys need basketball experience, even if it is in the G League, not in the NBA, and progression. And not that they're all going to become superstars, but progression to the point that, hey, we have role players. Maybe we found a superstar, but we also have our bench, our 6th, 7th, 8th guys coming in, you know, or whatever it is. But just progression is the main thing I want to see out of the Kings the rest of the year.
Well, and the word of the day is consistency, right? And,
yes.
And my number one is I would love to see the Kings and Dave Yeager establish by the end of the year an 8 to 10 man rotation where your key players, which are the De'Aaron Foxes, the Bogdanoviches, the Buddy Hields, the Frank Masons, they're playing over 30 minutes a game.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, you're seeing a lot of 10 to 12 players playing and all of them between 17 to 25 minutes.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen that on a successful team?
No. Not that I recall.
So give me, even if it is sacrificing some fan favorites like Jack Cooley or Jakarr Sampson not playing, by the end of the season, I want to see a consistent 8 to 10 man rotation where your key players, they don't necessarily have to be the starters, but the key players are playing over 30 minutes a game consistently. I think that's one of the major things that will give us a little bit of stability as Kings fans. And then we'll give Kings players themselves a little stability knowing, okay, I know how many minutes I'm going to be playing and I know what points of the game I'm going to be in so I can kind of establish myself and get into the flow of a game consistently on a night-to-night basis, which kind of leads into another short-term goal that I have is that by the end of the season or really over the next couple of months, I want the players to know and have established roles that they can always point to. And if they're asked, what is your role? What do you do for this team? No hesitation. They should know how to answer it. And right now, I honestly don't think anybody could.
Yeah, I mean, I like that Buddy Hield is kind of cementing himself as that sixth man off the bench.
Yeah.
It's a spot that's really working for him. That's a positive right there. Not only that he has his role, it's working. He's shooting like 47% from three.
Yeah.
And when you get a guy that's what they're supposed to do is knock down threes, it's good that he's doing it. Bogey shots coming around. But, yeah, I agree with you. Let's try and figure out the roles for these players that even if it doesn't work out, they know. You know, like I'm not a fan of the just jumbling the roster all the time and jumbling the rotation and starting lineup. Starting lineup, it makes a little more sense just because they're having so much trouble. But even then, pick one, let's run with it, and let's start defining roles. I agree with you, man.
Here's one that for me has been a big line in the sand is don't sacrifice competitiveness for player minutes. What I mean by that is I would rather see the veterans play more minutes than the future Kings or Scal be on the bench or De'Aaron Fox be on the bench for George Hill if it meant that the Kings were in the game at the end. Therefore, the minutes that De'Aaron Fox, Frank Mason, Bogdan Bogdanovich, these guys are on the floor, they're playing in a competitive game where every possession means something, and they're also facing the best that the other team has to offer because that other team is trying to win the game. I guarantee you, Jakarr Sampson benefited a lot and learned a hell of a lot from facing and guarding a LeBron James who knew he had to ice and win the game. That's a lot better than him playing against a J.R. Smith, who's the leading scorer out there with a second or third unit in garbage time that's just trying to put up points and finish a game strong. Like, the difference is humongous.
Yeah, and, I mean, we mentioned, I don't know, you and I talked about it off air, but Yeager's comments about Jakarr Sampson
right.
The other night,
yeah,
where he just bluntly said, do you have the quote up?
Yeah, I have it right here.
So, I don't want to misquote him.
Yeager was asked about Sampson's future with the team and if he would be, because he's on one of those two-way contract deals and he can only be up with the team for a certain amount of days before they have to offer him a full contract or put him in.
I think it's 45 games.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
But so Yeager was asked if they were considering that and if he could see Jakar as a consistent part of the team going forward. And Yeager very bluntly just said, probably not. Unless you do something longer term or bigger contract, when you're trying to develop guys, does giving Sampson minutes take away from those guys? And it's expected once Willie Cauley-Stein returns from his injury, Jakar will be sent back down to the G League. So anyway, as you're saying, Chuck.
Yeah, it just seems like that's part of the disconnect between coaching and front office that we kind of mentioned before about draft picks getting playing time and because of where they're drafted, because of contracts and things like that, where a guy like Jakar Sampson, he's gotten his opportunity, he's played well, and that's something, it's kind of a bad look for an organization, personally, when you have a guy who comes out and performs, and you don't reward that.
Yeah.
The idea that, hey, you came in, you played well, man, you played your ass off, and you did well against LeBron James, you did well every opportunity you've gotten, but we're still going to send you out because we drafted a guy. I don't think that looks great. Like part of it was with C.J. Beathard and Jimmy Garoppolo. Everyone wanted Jimmy Garoppolo to start. C.J. Beathard won their first game of the year, and people wanted Jimmy to start again. I'm like, no, you can't. You have to reward people for doing their job well.
Right.
You have to do that, or else people start losing faith in you within that locker room. And so, I don't know. It's just, I just don't like the jumbling around of the lineups and everything. And when you find someone that's playing well, run with it.
And I can't remember who tweeted it out, but I thought it was an excellent tweet and kind of an eye-opener for the state of the Kings, especially in regards to yet another slow start against the Toronto Raptors yesterday. But it's if you have to rely on a perennial G League player to come in and provide the spark and the increase in energy that the team needs to get back into a basketball game, you have a lot of struggles. And that's not taking anything away from what Jakar is doing.
Yeah.
And if he can develop himself into that consistently off the bench and hustle and energy guy, any team can use that. If he can develop his game and keep that energy and intensity going, there are teams that are going to be interested in acquiring his services. However, when you are a young developing team filled to the rim with guys that you're trying to establish and guys, quite frankly, that are higher on the rung of ladders above Jakar Sampson, you're going to want to focus on them more, which means guys like Jakar kind of get pushed to the side or forgotten a little bit. So good on Sampson for taking advantage of the opportunities that he's had here. But it's hard to go against what Yeager says because, quite frankly, Yeager has six or seven other guys that he has to worry about developing and getting to where he expects them to be above Jakar, and there's only so many roster spots.
And a stacked front court, too. I mean, I get it, but it just seems like a disconnect where Yeager kind of wants one thing and is, you know, has to do another. And it is what it is. And again, who knows? Maybe Jakar's play only lasts another week or so, you know? Not that he's a perennial all-star or anything, but he's definitely been a bright spot for the Kings so far this year.
We got KD on the line wanting to talk Kings. If this is Kevin Durant, I'm about to freak out. What up, KD?
No, not even close, fellas.
Damn it.
Hey, you guys are kind of spot on. My whole thing, my biggest concern is that, you know, you've got, and you guys are talking about it, you have George Papa, whatever his name is. And, you know, quite frankly, guys, I'm just going to be honest. I mean, I've coached basketball. I've been a Kings fan for a long time. This guy wouldn't survive on any team. He's not that good of a player. No. And I would rather see somebody like Jakar Sampson who gets out there and hustles. He's not as big. But, man, if you can guard LeBron James or you can get in a hole and do some of these dunks and some of these defensive plays, I'd rather see that on the floor than a Kosta Koufos. And quite frankly, Willie has been sporadic. I'm not saying, you know, get rid of Willie, but Willie has not been consistent at all this year. So when I see a guy go out there, and I only have two or three samples of what he can do, and every single sample is like, this guy's getting at it. As a fan, you have a hard time saying, oh, well, he doesn't belong here. And, you know, I think there's a big disconnect between Divac and the coach.
Yeah.
And I think Divac, and quite frankly, this new Bogdanović, I haven't been impressed. I mean, he might have been great over there, but I know if everybody was being real – on this show and on this station, he hasn't looked that good. He might be trying to find his shot now, but right now he's missed a lot of shots, and defensively he's not great. So I don't know. What's your guys' take on it? Because I just feel like Divock's vision is not the same as Jaeger's, and it's certainly – I don't agree with Divock's vision.
Yeah.
What's your guys' thought?
Well, Katie, thanks for the call, because you bring up a lot of good points. I disagree with you on the Bogdan Bogdanovich front, because he's also going through, just because he's older and he has, a lot of times, I think a lot of fans are looking at him not necessarily as a rookie, but as an established presence who is coming now back into the league. Mm-hmm. And that really isn't the case. He's still adapting and learning the NBA lifestyle. And what's really been his biggest struggle so far? It's been his shooting offensively. Yeah. And how many rookies do we see struggle to shoot the ball when they come into the league? So that's forgivable. What I've seen out of Bogdan that I like is, to me, he's the best passer on this team right now. He looks the most ready to be able to run and control an offense other than Frank Mason. And I think there is definitely a spot and a future for him that is bright. So I've been impressed with him. In regards to Willie Cauley-Stein, that you brought up, he's shown so many ups and downs to where I'd like to see him consistently even out, so we know what he's going to be. However, I think he more than deserves the minutes. But in regards to your comment about Jakar Sampson versus Papi Giannis, the reason why any team could use a Jakar Sampson is because you know what he brings and you know what he establishes, right? And you know his role or what he's going to bring to the table. At least we get an idea.
He fits today's NBA better than Papi Giannis.
Right, and in the small sample size we've seen, he's given us an idea of what he brings. Versus Papi Giannis, still to this day, I couldn't tell you what his role is and what he brings other than
a
tall guy.
Yeah, he's 7'2". Real quick, this just came in. KD just won Western Conference Player of the Week, so just shout out our last caller for winning that award. That's great. but I agree with the man. The Papi Giannis stuff is tough one to swallow, and I agreed. He just... A guy like Jakar fits today's NBA so much better than a, you know, plodding big man.
Yeah.
I mean, look at Boban Marjanovic. I know they're different players, but still, there's just barely a spot for them in the NBA anymore.
Mark, real quick, we're up against it, but you want to get in on the Kings. What's up?
I just thought that your discussion of not rewarding Sampson was a little bit misguided. I mean, you kind of hinted at it, but the problem isn't rewarding Sampson. It's who are you going to release? Because if they keep Sampson right now without a trade, that you lose a player and gain a draft pick, they need to release somebody straight up.
They have 45 games with Sampson before they have to do anything. I understand what you're saying, but they have 45 games to figure out whether or not he should be a part of the Kings or not. And if they do decide that he should, then they have to make the decision. But to shuttle him back and forth from the G League when he's playing well, I just don't like it personally. But yes, that is a problem that could arise, but they have, what, another 40 games until that happens? 40 games of him playing until that happens. So it's not an immediate problem.
More Kings talk to come later in the show. Coming up next, though, some big splashes in baseball. Matt George, Charles T. Hamilton, this is the Lowdown on KHTK. Welcome back into the Lowdown. Matt George, Charles T. Hamilton in for Damian Barling and Jason Ross. They filled in on the drive with Kyle Madsen. They filled in for Carmichael Dave. Everybody will be back to normal in their normal spots beginning tomorrow, so don't you worry about that. But we are trying to hold down the fort and do as much as we can to bring you all the happenings from this weekend. And there was a lot that happened in baseball. But before we get to that, Chuck, there were a couple things Kings-wise that we didn't get to the last segment that you wanted to touch on.
Yeah, there were just a couple things. KD was talking about Bogey, and he has his opinion, and that he is more than right, has his right to it. But I think Bogey's played well. Yes, his shooting hasn't been great, but if you look at Buddy Hield last year, as a rookie, he was shooting poorly before he came to Sacramento, and not that Bogey's going to be moved and start shooting well somewhere else, but it takes a while for it to come. No one comes in shooting great as a rookie, and I think it will come along. But the thing you're intrigued by and you appreciate is his basketball IQ. You can see.
Yeah.
Is he belongs because he understands the game. So I'm good with Bogey right now. I mean, if it's something that goes all throughout next year where he can't shoot, that'd be upsetting. But he clearly, his IQ, his basketball IQ, his feel for the game, his feel defensively, he belongs in the NBA.
And what's very encouraging, too, is you can see he's already established connections and chemistry with multiple players on the team, mm-hmm. whether it's at times, Buddy Hield setting him up nicely on the perimeter. We know the connection that he's had recently with Willie Cauley-Stein, also Kosta Koufos. He seems to know how to complement players very well and put them in opportunities and in places to succeed. And that's very important from a distributor and someone who you can potentially run your offense through.
And again, if his shot progresses the same way Buddy Hield's has, I mean, that's pretty valuable in today's NBA to have multiple knockdown shooters like that. And we had people on the text line asking if Frank Mason should start. I don't think so. I like his role coming off the bench,
yep.
And he has a role coming off the bench, which is a little more intriguing to me than throwing him in the starting lineup, because the plan is you want your top five pick to be the starter.
Yeah.
I mean, and you're going to give him every opportunity to be it. So I'd keep Frank Mason where he is. I like the role that they're figuring out for him.
And I was chatting with a texter during the break. One of the reasons, legitimate reasons, for Jaeger to not want to move Frank Mason or mess up anything that he has is Mason has been playing consistent minutes with the same guys in that second unit, which is one of the major reasons why they're playing so well together, is they're starting to complement one another and understand how to play with one another. And you run the risk of not just screwing that up, but also messing with Frank Mason by immediately throwing him out there. Mason does an amazing job coming off the bench and affecting the speed and the hustle and the feel and momentum of a game. He does that immediately. When the Kings need a spark, they know they can go to him and he's going to come in and he's going to give them that. Yes, you could use that in the starting lineup, but suddenly he has to establish that himself right from the get-go rather than allowing that to come to him and plugging him into certain situations, which you can do off the bench. I agree with you completely. I like what they have him coming in with the second unit. That's where I think he's at his best. Putting him in the starting lineup feels more like a short-term fix to a problem that is beyond just one player.
Definitely. Should we do our DeAndre stuff? I'm itching to get this out there, especially since we just had the callers talking about Willie Cauley-Stein and his inconsistencies, and a texter just asking. I'm doing it. I have to. Texter just asked, when are we going to trade George Hill? So this is all just random fanboy speculation. I'm a big NBA fan. As we all know, DeAndre Jordan is on the trade block. He is the, you know, has he made an all-star? Yeah, I think he's an all-star. All-star center for the Clippers. And he's on the trade block. Big salary, $23 million. And there's other teams out there, other speculations, Cleveland, Milwaukee, all these, you know, kind of random teams where the Clippers wouldn't be getting much back. Or if it is, it's young players that, you know, won't really help him right now. And the one that stands out to me the most, and this, again, reckless speculation on my part, there's nothing to back this up, but it besides the fact that the contracts match, and I think it would be a good move for the Clippers because they lost Patrick Beverley. Milos Teodosic is inconsistent, injury-prone. And one of the big worries about him coming to the NBA was, can he handle 82 games? And so far, he hasn't been able to. Would be DeAndre Jordan for George Hill and Willie Cauley-Stein. The contracts would match up. George Hill would come in, starting point guard right there for the Clippers. They get a guy like Willie Cauley-Stein to come play center for them because they'd be losing DeAndre Jordan. DeAndre Jordan to the Kings. I don't know how Kings fans would really feel about that. Just another center. But but if the hope or the ceiling for Willie Cauley-Stein is DeAndre Jordan, why not get DeAndre Jordan? You know what I mean? We've talked about the best way for Willie Cauley-Stein to play is the way DeAndre Jordan plays. Run, defend the rim, dunks, finishing lobs, all that stuff. So then why not get the guy that can actually do it? The contracts match up. Worst case scenario, he opts in for next year also, or he opts out and you get rid of that salary earlier than you would with George Hill, who it hasn't worked out so far. And again, we're early in the season. Maybe none of this happens, but it's just something that I think would make sense for the Clippers and make some sense for the Kings as well.
Now, I like it.
Okay.
I have two major concerns with it, though.
Let's hear it.
The first is that, and I have been tough on DeAndre Jordan. I firmly believe that Chris Paul made DeAndre Jordan.
Oh, no question. I mean, he is what he is.
That being said, I still think he has a place on any team, and a lot of teams could use him. And he, as of right now, because he knows his role, he's what you want Willie Cauley-Stein to develop into. Although I think we all agree Willie Cauley-Stein has a better chance or a higher ceiling when it comes to offensively, but in terms of rebounding, blocking shots, rim protection, a floor or a run the floor type guy at a center position for today's NBA, it doesn't get much better than DeAndre Jordan. My number one concern is that next year is a player option year for DeAndre. Yeah. He has $24 million on the table, so that'd be a hard thing to walk away from. However, if he's traded and he doesn't want to be in Sacramento, which I understand it's not necessarily easy to go from a potential playoff contender in the L.A. Clippers, let alone going from just the L.A. market to Sacramento, it may take some soul-searching on DeAndre, and you run the serious risk of George Hill I don't really care about, per se, and I say that in the nicest way possible. It's all you. Are you potentially losing Willie Cauley-Stein for nothing? And my other question is to you, Chuck, even though the salaries match up and you like George Hill as a decent fit for the Clippers and Willie Cauley-Stein fills the hole that you somewhat or somewhat fills the hole that you lose with trading DeAndre. Mm-hmm. But is that enough for the Clippers to make that deal, or is there some team out there that will give them more?
Well, that's the thing, and I've looked at it, at least some of these proposed deals. I would think it's enough because you're getting a starting point guard immediately if they want to. If the idea is, hey, we're going all in for this year, and we got our point guard, and then we have a center in Willie Cauley-Stein, so we're going for it. If that's what they want to do, I think that'd be a good deal. If they're packing it in, saying Blake's hurt, Patrick Beverley's hurt, let's just try and maximize whatever we can get and want to get young players and draft picks and stuff, it just really depends on the way they want to go. Like, I've seen some Thon Maker deals out there with Milwaukee, some other stuff. Some teams would have to be giving up a lot to make the contracts match. One of the main attractive parts of this trade is the fact that the contracts match mostly George Hill and DeAndre Jordan.
Yeah.
Willie Cauley-Stein is a nice throw-in because he could go play center for them, and he makes them match immediately. But $20 million for George Hill, $23 million on DeAndre Jordan, it works. And it fills spots for both teams. And DeAndre Jordan is an immediate defensive upgrade, not just at that center position, for the entire team here in Sacramento. And again, rumors of this. This is just me speculating completely. But it just seemed to match up perfectly.
And an immediate established leader you talk about as well. So immediately, it's pretty cool to see here. The first two texts that come in, Chuck. First one from the 916. I would make that trade as a Kings fan in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
Next text from the 530, no way.
Yep.
Too much potential in Willie Cauley-Stein. DeAndre is almost 30. We don't need someone that's not going to grow with this core. If DeAndre didn't have a player option next year, if he had, say, two more years on his deal and the Clippers called me right now and offered that, I'd say yes in a heartbeat.
Here's my thinking, though, and I understand the uncertainty of I'm not going to try it again because I've said it wrong twice. Not knowing what's going to happen with the player option. But I also don't think DeAndre Jordan is in line to make $24 million in a single season ever again in his career. So I think it'd be pretty much a safe bet that he'd opt in. My other DeAndre Jordan conspiracy theory is that he goes to the Warriors in 2 years. So, him and KD are very close friends. I have a lot of DeAndre Jordan conspiracy theories, if you haven't noticed.
From the what is it, 262? We are in a rebuild. He's too old in a head case. Please, no. Addressing the two negative ones, I can understand, and yeah. I understand where they're coming from. However, for those who are saying, why would you give up Willie Cauley-Stein because he's younger and he has a high ceiling? Look, here's the harsh reality. Willie won't believe this, and that's good that he doesn't believe this. If Willie Cauley-Stein could turn into what DeAndre Jordan is,
that would be a major
that would
success.
Be a success. Yeah. A.K.A. you're getting right now in DeAndre Jordan. If you made this trade, you'd get right now in DeAndre Jordan what you would want Willie to turn into, and there's no guarantee.
Yeah.
So keep that in mind when you're analyzing this. That being said, yes, it is pure speculation. In my opinion, if a trade happens this year involving DeAndre Jordan, I think he's going to the East because there are four major teams in the Eastern Conference that are in a hunt that could definitely use him, and those four are the Washington Wizards, the Cleveland Cavaliers, the Boston Celtics, and the Milwaukee Bucks. Mm-hmm. I think the Celtics, the Bucks, and the Wizards, all three of those teams have assets that they could give and trade with to the Clippers that are more enticing. The Cleveland Cavaliers, I don't know what they could possibly give up. I mean,
that's the thing. The Cavs, what works out perfectly with the Kings is the salaries, because they would only have to give up so much. Where with other teams, the Cavs would have to give up Tristan Thompson, Channing Frye, something else, and another draft pick. Where that's not enticing. What does that do for the Clippers? Yeah. It just gives them some bad contracts. Where with George Hill, it gives them a starting point guard. So and same thing with the Celtics. They're not going to trade Kyrie or Hayward or Horford. It would have to be a larger mix of players, where with George Hill, that's one player, and then you throw in Cauley Stein. That's where I stand with it personally. And, again, who knows what either of these teams want. It just seems to make sense in my NBA fan mind. Again, reckless speculation on my part.
Blame Chuck. He planted the seed.
Yep.
Some people like it. Some people don't. If you want to respond to it, let us know. This is the fun conversation to have. We do expect the Kings to be active coming the trade deadline. I would not be surprised at all. And we'll talk a little bit more about pieces they can move. Baseball fans, I apologize. We're going to push the baseball segment to next hour. Coming up next, though, Good Look, Bad Look, our staple from our show, The Weekend. Coming up next right here on The Lowdown. Welcome back into The Lowdown. Matt George, Charles T. Hamilton filling in for Damian Barling and Jason Ross. They will be back tomorrow. All will be normal and good again here on KHTK. But if you like this duo of me and Chuck, we appreciate you listening and spending time with us. You can listen to our show Saturday mornings. It's The Weekend from 8 to 10 a.m. Myself and Charles react to everything that happened during the week. Also preview some matchups happening that weekend. There is plenty of stuff that you can keep an eye on and plenty of stuff that you can become a part of, including this segment that we're about to carry over right here. We do a little thing called Good Look, Bad Look, and we want you to share your good looks and bad looks of the week and the weekend in sports. You can do that on the text line 441140, or you can even call us and give it to us on the air, 916-339-1140. If you don't know how Good Look, Bad Look works, you'll figure it out.
Have some fun with it, too. It doesn't always have to be, you know, sports.
Well, we're going to need some of your guys' help to at least bring me up a little bit, because I'm in a super, maybe it's the case of the
you
Mondays,
had a rough Sunday,
but it's a bad look day to me. So why don't we get this started, and I'll get us going with the obvious one that we open the show with. Bad look, the Oakland Raiders not being ready to play versus the Kansas City Chiefs. We talked about it. It's essentially, it's a playoff game. You had to take the field for a playoff game, and the Raiders, you know, they knew what was at stake, but they came out of the gate slow and just didn't look like they were ready to go, ready to play. They laid an egg when they could absolutely afford not to do so. Bad look, Oakland Raiders. You had a chance to really salvage your season and turn something around, and you failed miserably.
I got a mix here. It's a good look, Derek Carr, bad look, Jack Del Rio, because Derek Carr, good luck coming out and putting the blame on yourself. That's what a leader's supposed to do. Bad luck, Jack Del Rio, for never, ever, ever, ever doing that. Yeah. Ever. Not once. So bad luck, Jack Del Rio, man. Like, come on. You have to take the blame, even if it is just for show, just for the media, just for fans. It's something you have to do, and he never does it, and it's pretty frustrating.
You might be a perennial bad look from some of our text liners with your DeAndre Jordan potential Kings trade.
Bring it.
You're getting a lot
Bring
of feedback
it.
From people who are not
lucky,
interested.
Lucky I ain't running the Kings, man. Because it'd be done. Well, technically you can't trade George Hill till December 14th anyway, so.
Well, speaking of bad luck, how about fans that throw beer and objects at players when they're leaving the field? If you don't know what we're talking about, the end of the Seahawks-Jaguars game, and we'll get into more detail of this incident in the next hour, but Michael Bennett started a brawl at the end of the Seahawks-Jaguars game that resulted in Quentin Jefferson of the Seahawks being ejected a play later, and as he was leaving on his way to the tunnel, he had beer thrown at him. He then went over to talk to the fans that were originally had thrown beer at him, to which another fan threw beer at him, to which he tried to get up and go after that fan, and everything got out of control, and then there's more beer coming. You know, players, I get, like, oh, you have to be above that, and you have to be better than that. I get that, but any fan who's going to throw beer, I have no problem with a 200-pound man coming at you and kicking the living crap out of you, because if you're going to throw beer and stuff at these players, and you're going to be surprised or offended when they come at you, what the hell are you thinking?
No question. They deserve Quentin Jefferson giving them a beat down for that. That's absolutely ridiculous. Just because you buy a ticket doesn't mean you get to do whatever the hell you want. Good luck, Matt Barnes. I know there's mixed feelings about Matt Barnes up here. Sacramento native, you know, spent that half a year with the Kings. More known for his time with the Warriors, but he just announced his retirement today, said he did it his way, and you're damn right he did. I mean, he was going to be himself no matter what. So shout out Matt Barnes. I've always been a big fan of his 15-year career that, you know, probably shouldn't have been. That's one of the stories that I love, is the guys that fight their way into the league and make it a career. So shout out Matt Barnes. Congrats on a solid career. Congrats on a championship. And congrats on retirement, my man.
I've never been the biggest fan of how Matt Barnes handles himself and his antics, but we share a first name, and he's also a local guy. So, yes, congratulations, Matt Barnes, for for bringing some class to our name, I suppose.
There it is.
Another negativity, and myself and a texter from the 209 are on the same page.
Yeah.
Bad look, the Texans head coach Bill O'Brien and his comments after, and we'll talk about this too more in the next hour, a crazy incident that happened between the Texans and the 49ers. Tom Savage was hit hard, fell back on the back of his head in the end zone. His hands were seen shaking. Yeah. It almost looked like he was having a seizure. You could clearly tell there was some trauma there from how hard he hit his head.
Something was going on.
He came, he got up. They took him off the field. For two plays, he went back into a tent with a concussion specialist, whoever the hell they have, Joe Schmo, with a light in his hand.
Yeah.
He looked at him, said he was clear to play. He went back in for another series. It turned out to be a 3-and-out. Then they took him out of the game again. Afterwards, head coach Bill O'Brien said, well, had I seen the video and known how bad he was or how hurt he was, I, of course, would never have put him back in. And this entire press conference, instead of being about the health of Tom Savage and what you could have done to prevent all this, it became about, I would never do this. Look, this is my background. I would never. And it just became a let me defend myself thing. And it just ugly. It smelled bad. It just felt weird. Bad look, Bill O'Brien, for handling things that way.
I mean, he couldn't have handled it worse. Bill O'Brien, man. I'm sure he's going to get another chance next year after Deshaun Watson saved his job, but I don't know if he actually deserves it.
Give me some positivity.
Something good. Okay. That's tough. All
right.
You know what? No, good luck, Bruce Irvin, having a great year. Just turned 30 this year. I mean, he's a guy that I want back on the Raiders next year. Probably going to have a career high in sacks. This is what we expected out of him. He had a solid year last year, but he's really turned it on this year. So good luck, Bruce Irvin. Keep up the good work, man.
That is good look, bad look. Keep them coming for the rest of the show. We still have an hour left of the lowdown, and we want you to be a part of it. Good look, bad look. Send it to us, 44-1140 on the text line, or you can call us, 916-339-1140. 1 hour to go. This is the lowdown. Matt George and Charles D. Hamilton filling in on KHDK.